Good morning to everybody.
Morning, Chairperson.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, how are you? Good morning, Mamutlepo, how are you?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I'm fine, thank you.
No, thank you very much. Are you the only one from the Legal Practice Council who will be joining us?
Chair, I'll be joined by my executive committee, and I'll also be joined by my chief executive and my communications manager.
Okay.
So I think they'll be joining now, so it's only...
Okay. No, thank you very much. We are left with 6 minutes, so you can take this opportunity to drink tea and other things before we start.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and good morning to everybody. Today we are meeting the Legal Practice Council, led by the President of the Council, Mahmoud Lebo. You are all welcome to this meeting with the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services. When we assumed office in 2019, we took a decision that we are going to be interacting with all the important stakeholders in the legal profession, but we could not do so because when we started, we had a lot of pressing issues that we needed to pay attention to. But we have always had in the back of our mind that we need to do this important task of engaging with the Legal Practice Council. Last term we engaged with the judiciary, so this term we thought that it would be important that we must engage with yourself as people who are regulating the profession. We will start by introduction. We'll start by introducing ourselves. I think I will hand over to you, Mahmoud Lebo, to introduce yourself and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services. My name is Kathleen Shalilin Zipu, Madolo Zipu. I'm the Chairperson of the Legal Practice Council. With me is the Executive Committee of the Legal Practice Council, including, I think, the Executive Officer and our Communications Manager. So I'll ask members of the LPC please to introduce yourselves, starting with the deputies from there and everybody who's in here.
Thank you very much.
You're muted, Anthea.
Sorry. Good morning, everybody. My name is Anthea Platt, and I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Legal Practice Council.
Good morning, everyone. Greg Harper. I'm a member of EXCO, of the Legal Practice Council.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Trudy Nichols. I'm a member of the EXCO for the Legal Practice Council.
Good morning. My name is Jan Stemmet. I'm also a member of Executive Committee, but otherwise I'm an attorney in Polokwane.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Cherry Tinsouza. I am a I'm the Executive Officer of the LPC.
Good morning. My name is Gandhi Padella. I'm a member of the Council. I'm also a member of the Executive Council. I am a practicing advocate. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I think it's all the members of the Executive Committee who are in this meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Council. On our side, I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Bulilani Magwanisha, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services. Can other members do the same and introduce themselves? As you are introducing yourself, please make sure that your video is on so that everybody can see you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members of the Legal Council. My name is Noma Temba Masako Jele. I am the member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mama Chad.
Good morning.
Can you proceed, Honorable Horn?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Werner Horn. I'm also a member of the committee.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Glynis Brackenbach. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair of the LPC, and good morning to the EXCO members. My name is Wilma Nieuwhout-Kroegen. You can see me using sign language. You can see me signing. I'm using a sign language interpreter voicing for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is James Self. I'm an alternate member of the committee.
Thank you very much.
Kobodile Richard Janji. Thank you.
Can you see your face, Honorable Janji?
No.
Can you proceed in the meantime, Honorable Yako?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Honorable Yeliswa, and I'm an alternate member from the EFF. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Swart.
Morning, Chair. My apologies for being a few minutes late. Steve Swart from the ATDB. Thank you, Chair, and morning to all the guests.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Your volume is too low.
Could you hear me now, Chair? Is that better?
Yes. Yes, much better.
Thank
you very much to everybody and welcome. We had just prepared a draft program for this meeting. I'm not sure whether it has been circulated. It's not that we are going to, it's a hard and fixed program agenda. It is just meant to guide us, but people are free to raise any issue outside of this program. It was just meant to guide us. Chairperson of the council, did you receive the agenda?
Certainly, Chair. Certainly, I have received it.
Okay. Now, if there's anything that you want to raise that is not on the agenda, please feel free to do that. As I've said, that we felt that it would be important to meet with the legal counsel, practice counsel, especially that the act that regulates legal practitioners was passed in 2014. So it would be important to have a first-hand information to, from yourselves as to what are the areas of challenges in the implementation of the Act, what can we do to, on our side to ensure that we support you much more better. As we have also indicated, we have noted that there are many challenges that are facing legal practitioners, especially those from the legal from the previous the black people, the women and the disabled. So if you can take us through Chairperson, I guess that you will be the one who will be leading from your side as to say what are the issues that you think you need to bring to our attention. Over to you.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to register one apology from our ESCO, is Mr. Lutando Zugogo. He couldn't make the meeting. And it is indeed a pleasure for my executive committee and myself to be given an opportunity to interact with you. You are our most important stakeholder, the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, and we really welcome the invitation. As you are aware, we are a 23-member elected council consisting of 10 practicing attorneys, 6 practicing advocates, 3 ministerial appointees, 1 representative from the legal aid, and 2 law teachers. 1 must be a dean, is a dean, and 1 representative from the Fidelity Fund.
So, Honorable Chairperson, in order to facilitate this discussion, I've prepared a slide presentation to address the issues as they come on the agenda. So the slide 4 to 6 will address item 3 of the agenda. Slide 7 will address item 4, and slide 8 will address item 5. And slides 9 to 10 will address the last item. So, Honorable Chairperson, I'll be guided by yourself. Whether I should present the whole slides, then we'll take questions from there, because I've attempted to address all the issues that we have raised. So if I may be permitted to share the slide, so that at least I'll take you through, then the members can, after that, ask questions. Okay. Thank you.
I think that would be in order, Chairperson. Committee Secretary, can you allow the Chairperson to be in the slides?
Okay, thank you. Chairperson, I'm not able to yet.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Bonani, can you assist?
Good morning, Chair. It's here. I'm trying to get hold of Bonani because he's hosting us, but he seems to have also a little bit of network problems, but I've managed to get hold of him. He's fixing the issue now, Chair.
Okay.
Our apologies.
Maybe in the meantime, Chair, maybe you can talk to them and talk to the slides.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. In my slide,
it's enabled.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Can you see the slide now?
Yes, no, we can see the slide.
Okay. Right. Slide 1 is actually explaining that the Legal Practice Council is a national body, a statutory body established in terms of Section 4 of the Legal Practice Act. And it has replaced the 4 former statutory provincial councils, law societies, and is mandated to regulate the legal practitioners, attorneys, and advocates. So the Legal Practice Council has opened its offices in November 2018. And upon opening, we established five more offices, which is in Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Limpopo. As you will recall, we only had 4 law societies, which was the Northern Provinces, Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape. So we added five, so that each province must be, have a functional provincial council. So this means that members of the public and members of the profession have improved access to the regulator and all services we provide. We provide for enrolling legal practitioners, coordinating and managing admissions, conveyancing and notarial advance. We register practical practice vocational training, contracts for unstandard attorneys and pupils. We receive and handle public complaints and legal practitioners and the subsequent disciplinary processes. So most complaints will go through, will come from our provincial offices. So this is where the complaints are dealt with. So far, Honorable Chairperson, we have registered since our coming into operation, we have registered over 6,000 new legal practitioners and over 8,000 practical vocational training contracts, formerly known as articles, in all the 9 provinces. We have coordinated 5 attorney exams, admissions, conveyancing, and notarial exams, and we have covered over 29,000 candidates. And in September this year, we will administer the advocate admission exams. This is the first advocate admission exam we'll be administering. The candidates are now able to register online for their exams, and this has helped in streamlining the application process. We have developed a criteria for the consent of SILC, and we have submitted it to the Department of Justice for their input and approval. We have also published criteria for the accreditation of institutions that offer legal education. Accreditation can be done by means of, is done in order to ensure that we protect the integrity of our legal system. We have also published the norms and standards for compulsory training and of course qualification and professional development for the admission of legal practitioners. This includes attorneys and advocates. This is what we call PBT, to ensure that training of legal practitioners is standardized. And every legal practitioner who wants to be admitted after coming into the effect of the LPA must attend this particular training. We have facilitated the development of the legal sector code. The code is now with the Department of Justice, and we are looking forward to it being gazetted within this year by the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. All users of the legal services will be measured in terms of the legal sector code and be monitored by the Legal Sector Code Council, which will be established by the Minister of Justice. This is an important milestone in that it will ensure that the skewed briefing patterns are done away with and will be monitored. We have engaged SACITA to relook at its programs and include funding for training of legal practitioners, which includes pupils. And for the first time in the history of the profession, we have secured funding for pupils, that is trainee advocates, and they are receiving stipends whilst they are undergoing privilege. The LPC has to date submitted recommendations to the minister in terms of Section 34 of Act 28 of 2014 on the recognition of paralegals and community-based organizations, multidisciplinary practices, and vocational training, including pro bono services by legal practitioners. On the second part of the agenda that says the impact on COVID on the profession, as you know, all know that COVID has impacted everybody across the world. So the financial losses suffered are immeasurable, and the profession
has not yet recovered. The profession lost a lot of legal practitioners due to COVID, and we have legal firms that have closed down the provincial offices, and the provincial offices are collecting that information as we speak. We saw a huge backlog in our court system and other avenues where we work in. As the LPC, we established a benevolent scheme of 50 million rands to support mainly small firms and candidate legal practitioners during the period of COVID, the very earlier periods of COVID. Through our provincial offices, we negotiated with the legal practitioner how they can pay for their annual fees in installments. So the third issue that I want to address is the challenges facing the legal practitioners. Obviously, with our history, there's a lot of unequal access to work opportunities. This is why we had to come up with the legal sector code to try and address it. As you know, the legal sector code will be gazetted, and people, more especially government, will be make sure that they comply with it when they brief attorneys and advocates. We had to struggle a bit in response to COVID, but we managed to provide our practitioners with permits during the time when they needed them most. There's a gender disproportion within the profession, and it's still male dominated, but we are trying to address it. We still have barriers to the entry of the profession, especially women and black graduates. But we have come up with code of conduct which will address issues like the driver's license, that where a candidate attorney applies for to be placed with a firm, one of the adverts shouldn't actually indicate that she needs a driver's license. And we have actually standardized the language policy so that each one is able to use English for now as the language when they write exams. The lack of funding is currently one of the major challenges that is faced by law graduates who want to do pupillage. The profession's reputation is at stake. We have received more than 21 complaints, and we have suspended almost 190 legal practitioners, and we have struck off about 129. Much as our role is, as a regulator, is to deal with misconduct of errant practitioners, the increasing number of complaints is of a concern. How we support, we are just to mention that we are quite happy that the legal ombudsman will start operating in July, as we had a meeting with him. So it will actually alleviate the complaints that members of public feel that they are not being attended to. The issue on support of young black practitioners, we have engaged SACITA to relook at its programs and to include funding and training of legal practitioners, including pupils for the first time in the history of the profession of the LN. The LPC has secured funding for pupils. And as I said earlier, that they are receiving stipends to be able to survive whilst they are serving public pupillage. The candidate attorneys, they still get funding from SACITA for those firms and whose principals have applied to SACITA. The LPC has presently submitted its recommendation to the minister in terms of Section 34 of the Act, as I said, to recognition of paralegals and community-based organizations. We are actually involved in talks with the paralegals, how we can actually embrace them and make sure that we access to justice is secured by our South Africans. We have been having talks with the legal community legal based organizations, so the talks are still in progress. So the council has made sure that we continue to fund some accredited legal education institutions which are assisting increasing access to the profession by providing legal education. And we have additionally approved the funding for the 19 law clinics, taking into account the important role they play, not only assisting ordinary members of the public, but also training young law graduates and affording them an opportunity to access work in the profession. So the council is presently playing a dual role, that is of regulating the affairs of the legal practitioners and working in collaboration with legal practitioners, voluntary bodies like Bar Councils, Law Society of South Africa, Black Lawyers Association, NADEL, and who are primarily formed by the practitioners. There's still a long way to go. As you can understand, we are only 3 years in operation, and we will continue to engage with all the stakeholders to make sure that the South Africans have access to justice. I think, Chairperson, I've addressed most of the questions, the agenda items. We are free to take questions from members. I'll actually even ask for members from the LPC to add if they to respond if questions are asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Mamulipo. Are there any questions from the members? Clarity seeking questions or any comments? There's a request that the presentation be, if you can send the presentation to us so that we can send it to members.
Yes, definitely we'll do so.
Thank you very much. We have Honorable Horn, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Jele, Honorable Nivot Trachen, Honorable Swart, Honorable Janji. Miss Charity, is she from your council?
Yes, she's the executive officer from our council. Yes.
Okay, and then I think she will, after these members have asked questions, I think she will also assist either to add or to respond to the question. Is that fine?
Actually, Charity should be doing the most of the response because she's the administrator. She administers the legal practice council, but we are fine, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable Horn, can you start?
Thank you, Chair, and with your permission, I'll keep my video feed off. I'm struggling with bandwidth this morning.
Okay.
Yes, Chair, thank you firstly for the presentation. I want to address two issues. The first is in terms of practical and training for both candidates, attorneys and pupils, whether we could be apprised as to whether the Legal Practice Council have done an assessment of the impact of the shortened LLB along with the recurriculization of the LLB over the last years and what impact that has had on the preparedness of those graduates who start their clerkship or their pupillage and whether amendments have had to be made to the practical training that is being afforded. One thinks, for example, about the management of estates, which typically was a core module in years gone by in respect of the longer versions of the LLB, which seemingly is now fallen by the wayside. The same with issues around conveyancing and notarial practice, which typically, as far as I understand it, no longer form part of the of the optional modules even which universities has in respect of the LLB. And the mere fact that, yeah, typically the 6 or at best 5-year version of the LLB is now a 4-year version. So if we could get some feedback as to the knock-on effects of that, it would be welcomed. Then, Chair, secondly, one of the issues which we were appraised with when we first dealt with the preparatory work around the establishment of the Legal Practice Council was the arm wrestling that took place around issues of discipline. So if we could be appraised as to how those have been settled within the council, and maybe for us to say that, of course, the self-discipline and the speedy resolution of complaints of improper and unprofessional conduct is, of course, a core matter if one talks about the integrity and the independence of the legal profession as a whole. So I think it is important for us to be apprised of those issues as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn, Honorable Kultenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. I have 2 questions. One, you referred to the, and correctly so, the massive backlog that has amassed in cases as a result of, firstly, the historical backlog that just seems to get bigger and never smaller, and then, COVID didn't help that at all. Have you perhaps thought of or discussed or teamed up with Legal Aid, the NPA, et cetera, to make legal practitioners available to deal with this backlog, even if it's on a pro bono basis? Many years ago, when we had a very big backlog, prosecutors volunteered their time at night for night courts, as did the members of the legal profession, as did the judiciary. And we sat at night and worked off only backlog matters. And it worked very well. We worked the backlog down to almost zero. So have you explored those possibilities? You have, I'm sure, many attorneys who are not fully occupied and who could make themselves available on a pro bono basis. And then secondly, I have received constant queries from a gentleman called, and I don't expect you to answer this now, but I would like a reply in writing, please. A gentleman called Kevin McConnell. Kevin, K-E-V-Y-N, McConnell, who has written to you about a complaint he has about the way his matter was dealt with. He complains to me that he gets no response at all. Would you be so kind as to just fill me in on the background of that matter and what you've done about it? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Taylor.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'm not sure if maybe can I switch off my video, Chair?
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you very much. Let me just thank the Jefferson for the presentation and the team. I have only 2 questions, Jefferson, 2 or 3. But the first one that I would like to know about is get clarity on is the issue of the wellness of our attorneys, the in consideration with the their work, they are dealing with serious cases, and also the support on that area. Can I just be briefed as to, is there anything that is happening from that side, in from their side, from the side of the council, in order to assist in that area? Also, the second one, Chairperson, is on the issue of the complaints. I heard Uma Mundlebu saying that the complaints, most of them are dealt with at the level of the provinces. I'm not sure if maybe our people on the ground are aware, particularly in the areas, in the townships, are aware as to when they are frustrated, getting challenges when they go to the courts and all at the courts, and their cases are not attended to, and the attitude maybe of one or two of our attorneys, and the response that they get, how in fact I want to know as to the awareness of the council in terms of knowing about all those issues so that they can be able to intervene. Are they satisfied when it comes to how things are happening in terms of the complaints? And then also, Chair, that I would love to get maybe a progress report on, it is the issue of the legal sector code. That the who said it is now with the Department of Justice, if I did hear very well, Chairperson. I wanted to get maybe if what is the progress? Are they satisfied with the progress in terms of the, because I just said like it is still with them, they're working in terms of that, and that is the most important one, Chair, when it comes to the issue of addressing the imbalances when it comes to briefings, if I got it correctly. So can we get maybe a progress report as to are they satisfied in terms of the responses? Because this is also important. I think it also is very important. We have been getting complaints when it comes to the issues of briefing patterns. Our legal guys are very not happy, especially with the black ones, if I had to say that. They are definitely not happy. So if that issue can be, if we can be appraised with that one also. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Nivostra.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. The chairperson said that the new incumbents are 6,000, but I want to know altogether how many members do you have, if you can give us that number. I also want to know each person who graduates from the LLB, are they required to register with the council, like the social workers are required to register with the social work council to be able to practice? Is it the same case for the legal profession? Then 21,000 complaints is quite a lot. I would like to know how the complaints are handled. Is there a specific team? Does each province have a board member who handles the complaints? How is it handled overall? Companies or firms who have closed down because of COVID, how does the LPC assist them, or do you not provide any assistance? I'm aware, you know, of the cases that those companies might have had before they closed down. Who then handles those cases? And then I'd also like to see a copy of the codes. Maybe if you send the presentations, I have no idea what the codes are. So if you can send that with the presentation. Then the relationship between the Legal Practice Council, and Legal Aid. Is there any relationship? Do you assist each other? Do you work together? I'd like to know that. Thank you, Chair. I think that's it. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart.
Can we respond before? I think there are quite a number of issues.
We're only left with two, yes. It's only Honorable Swart and Honorable Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, and it's good to meet with the Legal Practice Council. I noticed that the term of office expires, if I understand correctly, on the 31st of the 10th. So what process is is embarking to replace the council, or is it only the executive? Sadly already, and thank you for your pioneering work that you've done in terms of the Legal Practice Council. I would just like you to maybe just embroider a bit on the impact and your perspective on the justice system from the legal practitioner's perspective. My colleagues have touched on the issue of case backlogs, the issue of what impact that has on the delay in civil trials, for example. We know in some provincial divisions, large civil trials, such as, if I understand correctly, the North Gauteng, where medico-legal, RAF and PRASA matters were removed from the role, and that has an impact, obviously, on legal practitioners. If you could give us, unpack a little bit more the impact of that, the civil trials, and, of course, the massive backlogs that you are experiencing. Thank you. And then whether there is an investigation into the allegations of law firms which are allegedly charging duplicates for RAF matters. There was an allegation of up to 340 million rand. Is that part of the 21,000 complaints? And that would seem to be very substantial. And then just to tie in with my colleagues, your capacity to deal with this very large number of complaints. So we're here to just hear some of the challenges facing you and to see to what degree we can assist the Legal Practice Council, given the fact that we passed the legislation some time ago, and we'd like to hear how it has been implemented. So from our perspective, thank you very much for the hard work that you and your team have done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. You'll be the last before they respond.
Thank you very much, Slal. Mahmoud Lebu, I think with your team, you know, I'm listening to you saying it's too much already. This committee can spend up to an hour because we expect people to know when we ask the questions. So please bear with us. Thank you, Chair. I am partly covered by the previous speakers, but I've got just the following issues, Chair, as both clarity and perhaps a brief comments. I think the first one, this legal sector code, I don't know the contents of it. It would be good, Chair, that we get that shared with us because there's a reference to it, and that it has gone to the minister and all of that. I think as lawmakers, it will be good for us to have that shared with us. That's a document number one, because it attends, Chair, if it's correct what I'm hearing. It is speaking to the issues that you as a chair have consistently raised, whether it's the briefing patterns and all of these issues. So it will be good for us to understand whether what you're proposing in the legal sector code goes very far enough to attend to some of these. And that for me, I would ask that it be prioritized that it's shared with us so that you can understand that. That's the first point. The second point, Chair, is I think it's very much appreciated what you were able to do, the 15 million that you're able to put up for assistance in terms of the small firms in COVID. That's really much appreciated to have taken that initiative. It shows leadership. Just two areas that I need better clarity on. I think the first one relates to the license. I don't know whether you are saying you see the license requirement as a barrier. I didn't get that properly, Chair, because I would be worried if that's what you say. Because we're encouraging people, and some even from school, from 16 years age up, once they get to that, people start a learner's process. Now, if you're going to get a qualified attorney, okay, who still
can regard license as a barrier. I think we have a problem there. And I'm not sure what you're suggesting that there be a relief in that matter. And I certainly would not agree, because if we're going to pack such basic requirements up until that level, then there's something wrong that we are doing. And it's expected at that point. And I'm raising that in my constituency. I work with informal settlements. So part of our program with you, that's what you do. So I can't even embrace or support any notion that says you must do away with that requirement for people at that level. I really cannot. So I need clarity. If that's what you're saying, I think you need to rethink about that, certainly from where I'm sitting. The third point, Chair, is around this issue of reputation. There is a serious reputational risk that we have. And I would ask, Chair, that the 21,000 complaints, if as a second document, it can be shared in terms of, but break down these 21,000, what is the nature of these complaints? And I'm raising this, Chair, that we deal with a lot of these in the Magistrate Commission, where you've got, and because some of them, when we do interviews, we come across all of these things. And it's important for us to get to understand the breakdown of this 21,000. That's a lot if you've got so much complaints. And Honorable Swart is correct. Bulk of that might come from your RAF issues and all of that, but it goes beyond that. So it is important to get a breakdown of the 21,000 so that we understand the nature of the problem. Because if we don't, we will continue getting these complaints with no intervention. So if that can be shared, I think for us as lawmakers, it will be good. And we deployed in different areas, as I'm making the point. And the what affects the Legal Practice Council manifests itself in the different kind of platforms. For example, I think you're saying you have over 129 or so struck off the roll. And so once you get that breakdown to understand, because I suspect that the next question for me would be to ask you, with this kind of reputational risk that you have you put together as a Legal Practice Council the kind of mitigating measures? Because if you've got these complaints growing as they are, certainly you'd expect this institution to be developing a program to deal with those and mitigate those issues. Because the bigger the number, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're successful in receiving or turning to complaints. It suggests that there's a lack of trust in the profession from the people who are engaging with it. So those are my just brief points, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji.
Sorry, Chairperson. I'm sorry to interrupt. Might I intervene? Unfortunately, I'm midway through a trial and court is starting again in about 20 minutes. So I have to leave if I can simply tender my apologies. But if I can just raise 3 points before I go. In relation to the challenges facing the legal profession, it seems to me that the three biggest issues we have to deal with at the moment are as follows. Firstly, the legal sector code. I think it is imperative that your committee has a very close look at that legal sector code. There hasn't been unanimity in the Legal Practice Council as regards all of the terms of that code. It is against the vast majority of the comments that have been received from the profession, which are against the code in its present format. The recurring theme is that the targets that have been set are unrealistic. They have been ameliorated to a certain extent as a result of discussions in the Legal Practice Council, but again, there is not unanimity in that regard. So I think that this is a very important issue. Fundamentally, why it is so important is that it's a different situation when you're dealing with government procurement of nuts and bolts. or state-owned entities of nuts and bolts than with the situation where the state and private parties are historically choosing a lawyer based on the lawyer's knowledge and experience. And what the Legal Sector Code proposes to do is replace that choice based on knowledge, experience, and expertise with a choice based on skin color. And you have to consider very carefully the implications of that, both locally and internationally, because the legal profession, by virtue of the Legal Sector Code, is being singled out in that regard and being subjected to possible standards that do not apply, for example, to the medical profession. If you want to choose a doctor, you can choose the doctor based on his knowledge, expertise, and ability to perform your operation. You're not compelled or induced in some way to choose that medical practitioner on the basis of skin color. So we have to be very careful in dealing with this. I accept that transformation is an imperative, and I accept that in the past, briefing patterns have been somewhat skewed. But the question is whether this legal sector code is the correct blunt instrument with which to address that, and whether it could not be addressed in more meaningful and less unintended consequence-driven methods. So that is a very important challenge facing the legal profession, and we need to consider that very, very carefully, what the implications nationally and internationally will be of enforcing such a code in this type of specialist area where skill and expertise are required. The second challenge is that, unfortunately, there has been undue tension between the Legal Practice Council and the General Counsel of the Bar. The General Counsel of the Bar and its sub-bars have historically been the biggest trainer of the advocates profession in the country. And previous reports by the law societies and the Legal Practice Council have dealt with those figures. We have a situation now where the Legal Practice Council has refused to accredit the GCB as a trainer of pupils. They have accredited the substructures, but the GCB has made a case that it provides important training as well, but there has been a refusal to accredit them thus far. That is an ongoing issue, and it's an ongoing challenge. The third issue I want to raise is somewhat of a silver lining that has been brought by COVID, but it is nonetheless a challenge. And commendably, the Rules Board is already addressing the challenge. And that is the use of electronic methods, for example, Zoom and electronic filing of court documents, et cetera, that have been propelled forward by the COVID-19 crisis. And as I say, that's a silver lining. And many of the courts are proceeding with that. But this is a development, in my respectful submission, that should be encouraged. It has a large potential to reduce legal costs and to improve efficiency in the legal profession. So those are my submissions. I'm sorry that I'm not around for the debate, but unfortunately I'm subject to the restrictions of the judge in the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Harper. This is a beginning of many interactions with the legal profession. I hope that in our next engagement you will have enough time to engage on the issues that you have raised. But we cannot stop you from attending this engagement. I think you are released.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. If I'm maybe excused.
Thank you very much. Mahmoud Lepo?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will actually...
Maybe because you have raised an issue that the questions were too many, maybe we should allow 5 minutes or so, so that you can caucus those questions with your team as to who answers what, so that you can be able to answer all of them. So we'll give you 5 minutes. We'll come back at 11. I think you would have been able to touch base with your members as to who does what. Is that in order?
That's it,
order,
sir. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can you come back at 11 o'clock? Thank you.
I joined.
Welcome back. Thank you very much. I think you've had enough time, Mahmoud Lebo, to caucus with your members. I will now hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. We that was not enough time. It was actually a lot of questions, but you'll pardon us if we are all over. But at least we will actually attempt to respond to all the questions. The first question on education, the impact of education on the shortened syllabus on conveyancing and notaries will be responded to by our ESCOM members, Trudy Nichols, and also she'll respond also to the issues of discipline, because as you know, Chair, the council operates through committees. We've got the professional affairs committee, we've got the risk and compliance, we've got education, we've got disciplinary oversight committee, we've got the legal fees assessment committee. So we've got different committees, finance and HR. So different committees feed into the council. But what we try to do in the provinces, we've got committees also that feed into the main council. So each member, especially on the ESCO committee, plays a role in those councils. Trudy?
Thank you, Chair.
Let me just, Trudy, can you please proceed?
Thank you, Chair. Just very quickly on the issue that was raised by Commissioner Horn regarding the assessment of the LLB and whether or not we have any issues with the LLB curriculum as it is. That's not necessarily our purview. In terms of the Legal Practice Act, we require to admit students who submit a proper LLB, and that's in terms of basically Section 26 of the Legal Practice Act, as long as they have a minimum qualification, which is an LLB. However, that issue is an issue that is being taken up at the moment and has been in the crosshairs of the Council of Higher Education since 2012, and they've recently, or not recently, it's now November 2018, I believe, that they released a report dealing with the issue of the LLB based on complaints and concerns that they've received regarding the nature of the reduced LLB and the quality of graduates that are coming out of it. So this is an issue that's been taken up by the basically by the Law Deans Association and the Council for Higher Education, And it's got its own processes that it's following. And if there is going to be any change to the LLB curricula, that'll be done through this association and the Minister of Education, and then that will follow through to us. But at this stage, that's not part of our purview with regards to that. But if it is, then our education committee will feed in any input from our side to that. So I hope that addresses that query. And then with regards to discipline...
Sorry, Ms. Knuckles, but don't you think that that should, you might not be dealing with it, but that should be of serious interest to yourselves. You can't be brushed aside in that way. I know the Law Society has a serious interest in that. Mr. Mutese even commented on the public broadcast on that issue. But don't you think that if the quality of graduates are being questioned by their standard, that should be of serious interest by the Legal Practice Council, but ultimately it has an impact on the quality of members you have?
Yes, I agree it does. And the feed-in that comes from our side goes through to the Council of Higher Education and the Law Deans Association, because it's where the LLB curriculum is ultimately formulated, and that's where all the changes will be made. So that is basically the focal point of where all the changes in relation to the LLB curriculum is going to be focused. And that was the result of this this report and all this the findings that have been going on in relation to this particular issue. It was not the focus or the purview or the main function of the legal sector, so to speak, but more the education sector, with the legal sector feeding into it, if that makes sense.
I think, through you, Chair, just to add, we participated in the colloquium, that recommendation on how the curriculum should look like, but the process is still ongoing. I think what the Legal Practice Council came into being, the Law Society of South Africa is still engaged, but we definitely feed into it. We recommend, we make our recommendations. It's not that it's an arm's length. We do make our recommendations. Thank you.
So, you can proceed, Ms. Trudy.
In relation to the discipline aspect, the disciplinary processes are facilitated throughout the provinces and are mainly a function at grassroots level through the Legal Practice Council's provincial offices. So the provincial offices facilitate the lodging of complaints by members of the public against legal practitioners. Once a member of the public lodges a complaint against a legal practitioner, then an investigation committee will be formed, and that investigation committee will investigate the complaint against the legal practitioner. If it finds that there is prima facie a basis for a disciplinary inquiry to be held, then a disciplinary inquiry committee is formed. And a disciplinary inquiry is conducted against the legal practitioner. Based on that inquiry, the legal practitioner is either found to be suspended or steps are taken to have that legal practitioner struck off the roll. If it's decided that the legal practitioner must be struck off the roll, then it's also a decision that's taken as to whether or not that legal practitioner's trust account should be suspended as well. And this is also done in the interest of the public as well. If after the disciplinary inquiry, it's decided that there is no basis for the complaint and the legal practitioner is informed of this, as is the complainant, and prior to the formation or the setup of the legal ombudsman, and now as it currently stands, because the legal ombudsman isn't fully effective, the only route that the complainant has, if he wishes to appeal that finding, is to go the common law route, which is to go to court to appeal a finding against a legal practitioner found not to be guilty of whatever the complaint against that legal practitioner is. Of course, from July onwards, once the legal ombudsman is up and running, then the appeal process will be from a disciplinary inquiry up to the legal ombudsman. So once the disciplinary inquiry is finalized and it's found that the practitioner is guilty of whatever misconduct, and the finding is that either he must be suspended or struck off, then an application is brought to court for that legal practitioner to be suspended or struck off. That is usually asked for, that relief is asked for in the alternative, because it is the court that ultimately says the legal practice council simply acts as the custos morum of the legal profession, sets up the facts relating to the complaint against the legal practitioner, and then asks the court to decide what is the most appropriate sentence to impose on the legal practitioner, and then the court decides whether or not it should be a suspension or whether or not it should be a striking off application. And that's the basis on which we do it. What we've also done in relation to facilitating complaints through all the provincial offices is all the provincial offices are manned, all the employees in all the provincial offices are people who are employed from the local areas and who speak the language from the area. And this is to ensure that when members of the public come to the offices of the Legal Practice Council, that they're not necessarily forced to speak English when lodging their complaints. They can speak whatever language it is that they speak naturally, to facilitate the lodging of the complaints and to make it easier for members of the public to lodge complaints and to facilitate the lodging of the complaint verbally as well as in writing. So that way everyone knows their rights with regards to how it is that they may lodge complaints against members of the public and make it easier. We've also had meetings with just one JP recently with regards to the pro bono officers in Gauteng. And of course, in relation to that, part of the pro bono officers also means making it easier for members of the public to know that, you know, the provincial council offices of the LPC are available, and part of the provincial council offices is also there for members of the public to inquire as to their rights and when they need to lodge complaints against members of the legal practice council.
I see Charity wants to say something. Charity?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add, Chair, on the response from Ms. Nichols, my council member on the disciplinary, because there's been so many questions from the committee regarding this disciplinary. And also, they were shocked that we receive about 21,000 complaints in a year. And maybe I wanted to just give some perspective to that. I think the last person who asked the question, it was Mr. Janji, actually almost nailed it when it comes to these complaints. There is some sort of a mistrust between members of the public and the legal profession. You are very correct, because you'll find that from these 21,000 complaints that we receive, not even half of them have merit for us to even continue an investigation or and run a disciplinary process. It is simply cases like a member of the public has engaged a lawyer, they did not win the case, and afterwards now they feel that the money they paid the lawyer was too much, and they then want us to then come in and get a refund for them. That is not what we are here for, because As a member of the public engages a lawyer, they discuss a fee on how much they will be paid, and whether they lose or win the case, they still have to pay the fee. It is unfortunate committee that the cost of legal services is still very high, but we believe that Section 35, which the minister is dealing with, will maybe give some, you know, leeway to members of the public so that there are some legal services that that are affordable, because right now they are quite expensive. So if you look at our complaints, you just maybe compare them to the strike-offs that we have, because not every complaint has merit, but it is lodged with us, it is recorded, and we respond to the member of the public and explain to them when there is no merit, and explain to them when there is merit, and if, and then we go through a disciplinary process or investigation, as it was highlighted by Ms. Nichols. Maybe just to answer other questions, Chair, that were asked. Another member asked about the number of legal practitioners. We have a total of 37,000 practicing legal practitioners, of which just under 7,000 of them are advocates. So majority of them are attorneys. We also have about 30,000 non-practicing legal practitioners additional to that. I'm just reading the questions that I wrote. Another member asked about the replacement of the council. Their office, the current term ends on the 31st of October. On the 1st of July, we, as the office of the EO, which is my office, will commence with the elections of the new council, which should be announced sometime by September, so that they are able to take over from the current council. Just on the issue of the backlog, I think there was a question about asking the legal practitioners to assist on a pro bono basis. We do have an issue with that, because on the new Act, Section 29 of the Act has not yet been promulgated, which talks to community services. So we have a difficulty in convincing legal practitioners to take up matters on a pro bono basis. We have urged them to do so. We have sent notices. We have offices in big courts here in Gauteng where lawyers are able to offer their services. But we find that because it is not a law for legal practitioners to do community service or to do pro bono, it is not everyone is offering their services to those who need them most. So we look forward to the minister to promulgate that section and maybe give us guidance on how many hours the legal practitioners will be required to do community service. And we hope that that will contribute to free legal services to those who need them. There was a question from Honorable Breitenbach about Kevin Makono. I have not received this complaint, and I will ask maybe Bonani to maybe send this to us so that I can check where this complaint is. We only received one complaint, which we responded to Bonani, which was sent to the PC. I haven't received anything about Kevin. If I can send the details, I will be able to respond to that. There was a question also again on if someone is admitted as an attorney or an advocate. Yes, it is mandatory that you enroll with the Legal Practice Council, whether you'll be practicing on your own account, in which case you'll be put on the practicing roll. And if you're going to maybe go work in a bank or in government, you'll then be put on a non-practicing roll. Currently, we only charge practicing legal practitioners an annual levy of 4,000 rands per annum, and we are not charging anything to non-practicing role, but we do regulate them, and if there is anything that they do wrong, we have jurisdiction over all of them. Chair, I have tried to answer some of the questions that were put to us, unless there is anything that I have missed. I see someone typed something. I think I couldn't read it. Chair, you may take over. Thank you.
There's another question that from Honorable Briston Buff regarding the case-based law. We have actually have made sure that there are additional committees to deal with our complaints at the provincial council. So it's no longer a crisis. We are fast checking some of the complaints. The legal aid and the MPA, we do work together because legal aid is represented within our council. So we feed each other information and anything that's needed from the legal aid we attend to. The NPA, we have a couple of, we have had some few meetings with them, but it was mainly regarding the subscription of their members paying, whether they are practicing attorneys or what they wanted us to confirm if they can have their act amended. So the issue of the impact on the justice system from Honorable Swart, I'll ask my deputy to deal with that, Advocate Blatt, and also the anything to do with the COVID. Anthea.
Thank you so much, Chair and Commissioners. On the impact on the justice system, what we found is that we, as Trudy Nichols has said, we have had conversations and engagements with the various JPs. We started with the Gauteng JP. And thank you, Commissioner Breitenbach. Your idea about doing working out the backlogs in a night session, I think, is something we should take to the judiciary. But those cases are run by the judiciary, and it's them that will have to decide how we can deal with it. We can go to them definitely with suggestions as to how we can alleviate that backlog. But I think with the impact of COVID as well, the cases that they are currently doing are far less than what we normally do prior to COVID. So that is adding to the backlog. And I think some of the difficulty is that with this virtual court system, it's not always getting done the way we would normally do things. And I think that is also having an impact on legal practitioners, where connectivity is also a problem. So that we will definitely take up with the judiciary. We will also speak to our legal practitioners to see how we can move the backlog and try to get through it. We'll definitely have talks again with the NPA and legal aid on this issue to try and see how we can deal with that. I just wanted to add something to what Trudy had said as well. With regards to complaints that the judiciary is experiencing with legal practitioners and how we can deal with that, we can only deal with a complaint if it is lodged with us. We can't deal with a legal practitioner mero muto. There has to be a complainant. And if there are no complainants bringing this to us, we cannot investigate. Our hands are effectively tied. So we can only investigate a legal practitioner for any decorum problem or any insult to the judiciary if there is a complaint laid. So that's why we're also dealing with the JPs to say that if they find that there's a legal practitioner that's not acting correctly in front of them, that they refer that matter to us. And then we would be able to deal with that. I think that's the only way we would be able to deal with the issue of legal practitioners and their decorum in court. So I think that is my topic done on the impact on the justice system. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are two hands again, Advocate Badela. I think she wants to add Chair and Charity. Advocate Badela?
No, it's an old chair for me.
Okay, Advocate Badela.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. I just thought I should just highlight one issue that has been raised in one of the questions, and I'm saying this for the purposes of the future, because I believe that when the Act was passed, this was not given thought to. What would then happen this year is that the whole 23 councillors who have been in the council this year will all leave council and a new one come in. Whilst we agreed that we are going to try and find a way of transitioning those who are coming a proper way to do, because we do need to have institutionally, and as such, what I would urge to the committee members of the portfolio committee is to find a way of amending the act such that not all 23 councillors are terminated in future. Maybe a third of those can be terminated, and the two-thirds come in, so that we can ensure that there is continuity and also there is institutional memory. As it stands now, it means that by end of December, there will be new councillors that are dealing with issues. Whilst we would have provided a transition of 1 month, that may not be adequate to ensure that everybody is up to speed with what is happening, and therefore they deal with it, they come. They will have to find themselves, find their feet, and start understanding what is it that we're doing. So I think it's something that we really, really need to deal with in the future to ensure that there's continuity and also institutional memory is retained. The last issue that I also think is important to have, it was raised just lightly again in the questions and the answers that were in. The chairperson of the LPC highlighted that we engage, for example, with the NPA insofar as the issue of regulation and payment of subscriptions are concerned. We've also heard the people advocates in the military also asking for the same thing. The issue that they have is that they may be practicing in the public sector and have got experience and seniority, but then when they want to go to the private sector or want to gain a status recognized as practicing, they want the LPC to endorse that, and we can't endorse that because they are not either regulated through us or by us, and it becomes a problem. I think the LPA should be amended to clearly indicate as to how those who are in the public sector are regulated and what obligations they have, and when they transition from that to the private sector or want to practice or want to take silk, what should apply? Thank you.
So Advocate Padela, you think that should be in the NPA Act, or we should amend the current legislation, the Legal Practice Council Act?
The current LPA is not clear as to how we deal with this. And we have sought to say, if you are an advocate, you have been admitted, you fall under us, you are regulated by us. But then there is a problem, and I don't want to say people don't want to be under us, but for us it's a simple, if you are practicing and you are providing legal services, you must be registered with us. You therefore must pay subscriptions to the council. And therefore there is a tussle between payment of subscriptions and recognition. But more important, what I'm raising is that when those members want to move now and come over to the other side, they would like to have their years of practice recognized, but it can't be recognized because you were not enrolled with the LPC. Thank you, Chen.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Ms. Nichols, do you want to come back, or is it an old hand?
Thank you, Chair. Just one last comment on the challenges faced by the legal practitioners. We did address a response to the minister on this particular issue in the context of COVID, and this was in April last year, after we had consulted with stakeholders, largely the legal practitioners, attorneys and advocates on the consequences of COVID and the lockdown and how it affected legal practitioners. And this has played out in the whole of 2020 and still continues to play out. And part of the responses that we received, and which we addressed in a response to the minister, was largely to the effect that the effect of COVID and the lockdown and the effect it has on legal practitioners was It was financial, it was operational, it was technological and related to human resources. From the financial perspective, most legal practitioners, be they attorneys or advocates, saw a reduction in their income. This is largely from not receiving instructions anymore and also from not receiving payments from existing clients, and one of those existing clients being state-owned entities not paying historic bills that were due to both attorneys and particularly advocates. From the operational and technological, with everything moving to online and remote, we found that this was prohibitive for legal practitioners, particularly those who had to, on very short notice, now start working remotely. The cost of now moving to remote working was prohibitive for them to now afford laptops or being in areas that didn't have the infrastructure to support them working remotely, and this impacted their ability to earn an income. And then from the human resources aspect, because there was a reduction in their income, including being able to generate an income or receiving payments of historical invoices that were due, the first thing they had to reduce their costs was to let go of staff. So they start with admin staff, and then they start with junior attorneys and with candidate attorneys. And we found that the legal practitioners that were the most affected were generally small practices, which is Black-owned practices. And in the context of advocates, it was women and junior advocates, which are Black advocates as well. So that also affects the whole transformation imperative of the legal practice, legal practices in the country. And we try to ameliorate that with our benevolent scheme, which is to assist legal practices by providing them with assistance. It wasn't a lot, but we tried our best there, but we see this still playing out in that a lot of legal practices have closed down, people have died, people have committed suicide. So the consequences of that are still playing out in the legal practices sphere.
Thank you very much, Ms. Charity.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I thought maybe just to give the committee some insight also on our financials. The council is funded mainly by the Legal Practitioners Fidelity Fund, and they determine how much they are going to give the Legal Practice Council. Just to give you an example, moving from 2020 to 21, they reduced their funding to us by something just over 35 million compared to what they funded us last year. And this was mainly because their liquidity had decreased. So they have to have enough funds for them. I won't speak for them, but briefly, they must have enough funds for them to be able to fund those members of the public who have been
allergy when we take shortcuts to complicated problems, which sometimes can be very systemic. I've got an allergy to that. So, because agreeing with Ms. Lepu that it seems that the legal sector code was a much debated issue amongst them, but listening to Advocate Harper, he's raising very serious issues. And that you can't just dismiss. And I'm hoping that when this comes to us, and at some point, Chair, in given your leadership, we might need a platform where you have the minister and the council and us perhaps reflecting on this, because I don't want to take light the issues that Advocate Harper raised. I really don't. And if there's a discrepancy there, that discrepancy needs to be attended. And that's what I'm referring to, shortcuts. I would not be just rushing for something to be promulgated or enacted or made a law when you know it is not going far enough to attend to a diagnosed kind of a problem. Otherwise, we're going to do this all the time. We're going to deal with the same problems even in the seventh term, Chair. That's really my attitude. And I'm also raising that attitude even in relation to this small thing. It looks very small. It looks something like something can do away with. But the issue here is the issue of an attitude that doesn't start with the LPC. It has to start somewhere, because you're not the only institutions. So in other institutions, we insist on something, which is as basic as the license issue. And so the question I'm is, so why is it a problem to them when it is not a problem in some of the similar institutions that we have? It looks simple, and it looks like when you do away with it, in the absence of the states, that it will open floods of enrollments and all of that, and people becoming successful. They know that better. I'm not in that space. But the comment I was just making, Chair, is we must just be reluctant to take any shortcuts in everything else that we're doing. And this is more so in relation to what you've put together as the legal sector code, which we have requested to see, so that we can also contribute to that body of work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, maybe you must just verbalize your question.
Thank you, Chair. No, it's just I wanted to find out with the caseload that they have, if they have time frame in dealing with those issues, even maybe monitoring the provinces when it comes to dealing with these issues. Maybe what would be the time frame that maybe from their side that they would expect that it should have been completed by the...
Thank you very much. Maybe before Mamudlepu responds, I have just a few questions on my side. One, it is said that there were delays in the establishment of the appeal tribunal. If you can take us through what were those delays, have you been able to establish the appeal tribunal? And that is one question. And then there is also on your slides, you have indicated as one of the areas we are working on the multidisciplinary practices. If you can just take us through what are your thoughts on these multidisciplinary practices, what form will they take, and whether are there any risks, because we have been able to pick up risks, especially in the auditing profession, where some auditing firms who are doing auditing and business advisory have found themselves to be involved in serious conflict of interest. And maybe if you can take us through what form will these multidisciplinary law firms take. And then on the issue of training, currently you have your PTC, your paralegal training course for the attorneys and the one of the advocates. Where do they differ in terms of content? If, for instance, for a person who has done his or her PTC, except the issue of trial advocacy, if that person goes to the bar, why is that person required to do the whole year again? If you can answer those. And then I think the last one, I think in the Act there is a provision that deals with admission or allowing foreign firms to practice in the country. What would be the risks associated with that? Because I know that was with it, I think the Minister of Trade and Industry must make regulations with regard to that. What would be the risks or benefits to the country for such move, but starting from the risk that would be associated with allowing those firms to practice in the country. Over to you, Mahmoud Klebo.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask Charity to respond to, because mostly the issue of PVT and where do they differ, she's very open with that. And secondly, I'll also ask her to respond on the appeals tribunal, because it's part of the act that she deals with. But on the issue of multidisciplinary practices and the foreign friends, myself and Ms. Nicholson, we were the ones championed to advise, to counsel about how to move forward, because we are also worried about the treaties and international agreements that our country signs, and that sometimes impacts on the legal profession, and we are not part of that and we don't know. So I'll ask Trudy to deal with it. I think we'll start with Charity.
Thank you, Chair. I think the Legal Practice Council noted that there shouldn't be any difference in training of both attorneys and advocates. Hence, it requested an amendment in Regulation 6 and 7, which I understand that it reached your offices late, so it could not be placed in your agenda for this session. I think they advised that it will now serve before you sometime in August. But as it currently stands, the differences in training is that advocates, for example, do not do estates. They were not doing bookkeeping currently. And attorneys do not do trial advocacy training. But in terms of the regulations, most of the courses are similar. Everyone has to do ethics and all the other legal training that is required. But if you eventually get our amended regulation 6 and 7, you will see that the course content will now be exactly the same. That is what we ask that the committee approves that we amend, so that a person who has done a PVT can at any time change between becoming an attorney or an advocate without having to do a full year. But the question from the chairperson also is a requirement of the bar is not under our regulation. They require their own, they've got their own rules on why they require a person to undergo their own pupillage to become a member of their bar. But in terms of our enrollment, you could still be an advocate enrolled and duly recognized by the LPC, but the bar may impose their own training requirements to become a member of the bar. Sorry, Chair, the other question you said I must answer?
Issue of the appeals tribunal?
Or the appeals tribunal, Chairperson, the delay was that a tribunal can be made up of, for example, 4 or 5 people or 3, I can't remember the number exactly, of which one of them must be a person who is appointed by the ombudsman. Now, the problem is that we could not have an appeals tribunal because that person was missing from the team until the ombudsman came into office. And then at the meeting that we had with him a week or two ago, he has assured us that he's already started compiling a list of those people, because those people are going to be lay people, not necessarily lawyers, who will fit as part of the team with the lawyers to be part of a tribunal and hear the appeal and make a recommendation as such. So we could not do a tribunal because that one person who was appointed by ombudsman was missing from the team. So that part of the act was also not promulgated yet.
Okay, Advocate Badela, I see your hand. Are you following?
Chair, I just wanted to raise an issue based on what was asked on international law firms practicing in the country. Chair, as you may know, and I think in the deputy and also Trudy, one of the things that I believe as a country we are not doing right is that, as an example, we are operating within our borders, but we are not encouraging SADC regions and people in the continent to be able to do the same. For me, I think as an African, it's something that I feel we as a country are shortchanging ourselves. As an example, I am unable to appear in Zimbabwe. I need special dispensation in order to do that. They also cannot appear in South Africa. They need special dispensation in order to do that. And we are at the same time belonging to the same region, having the same objectives of ensuring that the region works, because none of us can be able to function properly and effectively and efficiently if we are not coordinating our activities. We are not working together and we're not doing things together. The best way of doing and dealing with issues is to start having people integrating, meeting, engaging, working together. That, to me, is going to enable people to understand themselves better. It will deal with many of the challenges that we see, the fears, the perceptions that we have, that they are going to take our jobs, we are going to take their jobs. And yet, when we interact in the region, we've got trade amongst ourselves. We've got dispute that arises amongst ourselves. And we find that each of us as a country wants to solve these problems within themselves. And there is no legal framework that enables people to provide services across the border. This, for me, is made worse by the fact that we've got now the Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement, which facilitate regional integration as a starting point, and therefore and thereafter with the integration of the continent as a whole. I would urge committee members to find ways and to assist the incoming legal council to be able to promote and drive this process, because it is only when people engage with each other that we resolve perceptions. We don't want to be fighting over crumbs, but we want to be able to cooperate and work together. We don't want to be creating barriers for others not to come in, but we want to make sure that there is access within the region to be able to do work. The reason why I'm vocal also about this is that we allow firms from America here, but we can't allow our neighbor to do the same. I really would appreciate if we can get assistance on this. I know that the SADC Lawyers Association regulators in the region to harmonize our laws to enable practitioners to practice across the region. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Patella. Chairperson.
Okay, so thank you, Chair. Also to respond to, I give to you just to explain to what we had recommended to the Minister regarding multidisciplinary. But I just wanted to respond to Honourable Chair's issue on the process. I think Charity, I think from what I can hear, Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee are more worried about the process of our DC. I think if you can just explain how long does it take depending on the complexity of the matter. Please, Charity.
Thank you, Chair. I tried to type it on the site, but let me just explain. When we receive the complaint, we read through the legal office, whose most of them are admitted attorneys or advocates, will read through it and see if there's merit. And then we have to send it through to the lawyer who's been accused of any wrongdoing. We give them 21 days to respond to the complaint, and then we then submit the response to the complainant. Sometimes you find that there is a back and forth between the complainant and the lawyer, each providing answers to each other. And then we then eventually if there is merit, we will then set the matter for an investigation committee to sit. Now, we normally have a three-member investigation committee, which is all practicing legal practitioners. And if it's a matter for an advocate, we ensure that there's an advocate on the panel. They then go through the paperwork that is provided. They do that in a day, and they decide whether the matter warrants for a formal disciplinary hearing, which must be undertaken. So they give a recommendation to counsel whether we must then refer the matter to a disciplinary committee. So if there's an investigation committee, and then there's a referral to a disciplinary committee. We then put together a disciplinary committee, again, which is independent legal practitioners, who then sit and hear. Sometimes they will call witnesses, and sometimes the lawyer who's accused of doing wrongs will have a representative representing him during the hearing. And then finally, the decision of the disciplinary committee is final. They then issue either a fine, or then they recommend to counsel for a strike off. Now, only counsel can and is given powers to strike off an attorney or an advocate. So it will then go again and serve. If it's a strike off, it must serve before a council, which is the 23 member council from the PC. So, you know, the whole process is long. It possibly is shorter if it's a fine. It could be about 6 months if it's a fine. But if it's a strike off, it then depends on the next council meeting. But what we do is that when it's a serious matter, for example, a misappropriation of funds, we do not wait for a council meeting to do a strike off. We serve it before EXCO, and then that strike off will then be ratified by a full council meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Charity. That's truly genuine. Do you want to add on the multidisciplinary recommendations that we did?
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very quick on that. Just essentially, a multidisciplinary practice is a structure that would allow attorneys to enter a partnership to share profits, risk, and information with non-attorneys, such as accountants, architects, or mediators, or insurance consultants, for example. And this type of structure or partnership is currently not allowed in terms of the Legal Practice Act, because the Legal Practice Act prohibits attorneys from sharing fees with non-attorneys. So that's prohibited at the moment. But so, and one of the reasons, one of the concerns about multidisciplinary practices is that there's concerns relating to issues of client confidentiality and privilege, and of course the overriding duty that legal practitioners have to the courts. So that's one of the main concerns against multidisciplinary practices. But one of the benefits which could flow from having multidisciplinary practices is that it could allow for better access to justice, and it could help with, you know, the introduction of technology in legal practices and with the combination of multidisciplinary practices. And this has been seen in the international context as well. So as part of our submissions to the minister on this particular aspect, we made the point that if multidisciplinary practices are to be permitted, then the legal section of this multidisciplinary practice needs to be managed separately, as if it was a separate law firm under that multidisciplinary practice, and it needs to be overseen by a legal practitioner who complies with the legal practices code of conduct and with all the obligations of a legal practitioner, so that we are ensured that it's a qualified, admitted, and enrolled legal practitioner who can monitor and manage the legal services provided.
And then we've also said that if there are going to be multidisciplinary practices, then there need to be stringent safeguards that need to be put in place to ensure basically the independence of the legal professional and of course the ethical conduct of the legal practitioners within that multidisciplinary practice are not compromised. And we've set out a few suggestions with regards to the safeguards that would be appropriate if multidisciplinary practices are going to be allowed. But at the moment, multidisciplinary practices are not authorized or allowed in terms of the Legal Practice Act. So that will be something that the minister would have to authorize and make amendments to the act going forward.
All right, thank you, Chair. I think we have covered most of the questions.
Thank you very much. I don't see any follow-up questions from members. Let me take this opportunity to thank you very much for your work that you have done so far. You were elected just after 2014, but we think that you have done exceptionally well. But I do take the note from Advocate Badella that we might need to consider the staggered approach to rotation of members of the council. In some SOCs that has already been done, where a board, you just don't have a board being rotated all at once and over a period of time, that those are some of the issues that we would need to have on your side proposals for legislative amendments based on the experiences that you have had in the past 3 years coming to an end in October. Advocate Badella spoke to the issue of membership, that it is not that clear, but I think it would be important to have a comprehensive proposals that based on your experience in the last 3 years, what do you propose as amendments to the Act? Because even the issue that Ms. Nichols is talking about, the issue of the multidisciplinary practices, ultimately it can only be changed by Parliament because it's an act of Parliament. But we also do take the issue that was raised by Honorable Breitenbach. I think it's a very important issue, but I think it goes beyond just discussing this matter with the Legal Practice Council. I think it's an issue, the issue of the night court to deal with the backlog. I think it goes to also our discussion with the judiciary, the prosecution. I think it's something that we need to take it up very urgently so that we don't have a situation, as members have correctly been arguing throughout, that the role currently has a potential of collapsing the system if it is not attended to. It's something that we should be spearheading, especially when we come back from recess. And one of the issues that we will be prioritizing when we come back from recess is the issue of the rules. We could not process them this term because we are dealing with the budget votes and the three JPV bills, which took a lot of our time. But when we come back, we are going to be prioritizing it. Either we finish it in this first 5 weeks, or when we come back before December, but we would deal with the rules. We need to, I'm concerned that this matter is coming when you are just about to finish your term, because the issue of the legal sector codes would need a lot of engagement between us, the ministry, and yourselves, as Comrade Dunji has noted. Because also on our side, we are generally very concerned about the issue of the briefing patterns. In your other capacity, in the JSC, I mean, it is a matter of serious concern. Because on one hand, you have the department that says that they've briefed 83% of their briefings go to black people, women, women and people with disability. But on the other hand, you have judicial officers and members of the profession that says, no, there's no such. Now, as Parliament, we are concerned, because if there is this 83% of the briefs that goes to black people, women and people with disability, and then when you go to the people that are supposed to be receiving these briefs, they say that they're not getting these briefs. So it's important to know what is what. And we think that because on our side, we had entertained a thought that before we leave office, we wanted to do. But we think that issue of the legal sector codes is one of the issues that we are seriously interested. We're interested in what is in the code, and also whether the code will have teeth. Because we are not really pleased with some of the charters where there is a charter that promises heaven and earth, but it cannot bite. So it's important that there has to be that intense discussion, and with the council, that even if we are not able to deal with this year, that that not all of you are going to be rotated out, that there will be some that will remain behind, so that we can have engagement seriously on this issue of the sector codes. Also, we think that there was a request that the nature of complaints be sort of be submitted to us, but there has to be a segregation of the nature of these complaints. For instance, when we were dealing with the issue of the medical legal fraud, together between ourselves, the SIU and the NPA, there was a legal practitioner who was fraudulently getting 66,000 rand a day, every day except Saturdays and Sundays and holidays for 3 years without doing anything. We think that that is highly unacceptable. We are really concerned about the reputation of the legal profession, especially on the RAF matters, as members have raised. Every time you listen to this NCA program, there are always people who are alleging to have been robbed by members of the legal profession. So it's important that these matters are dealt with speedily, so that the reputation of the legal profession is restored. Because if people can lose respect for the profession, our democracy will not be able to survive. So thank you very much. We are going to be, from time to time, we will set time to engage with the legal with yourselves, and also we are still going to engage with the council, the deans, on the issue of the LLP, because it is a statutory requirement. It is a statutory requirement in the Legal Practice Act. The issue of an LLP is there. So we cannot also on our side pretend that it is not there. So if there is a problem or there are concerns, as Parliament, we are required to at least deal with those issues. So we'll also be, at some point, be engaging with the deans and the teachers of law and with yourselves, because one of the areas that we want to run away with, to run away from, is to reduce that issue just to be an issue of an academic exercise. It's not that an issue for academics. It should be. It is an issue for all of us, Because one of the arguments that I picked up is that others are saying we must go back to a five-year LLB, which is a BA, BCom LLB, and then others are saying, no, it's a matter of restructuring the current courses. There's no need to increase the number of years to the LLB. So it's an issue that we think it's quite weighty. We would need to engage on that also as Parliament. But thank you very much for all the good work that you have done. We know it was not easy. It's a difficult job that you were able, that you were able to do within this short space of time. We hope that we will see many of you coming back to the council so that there is a kind of managed and institutional memory that is left behind and a managed change from one council to the other. I think it would be important that we as one of the issues that we will discuss with the minister is that the bill needs to be amended to afford that and other issues that were raised here. But I think it will be important that we can write the submission to the minister and to ourselves so that we can do the amendments as soon as we can. But thank you very much, and thank you to members and everybody on the virtual platform. Thank you for attending this meeting with one of the important stakeholders for our committee. And we are sorry that it took so long before we met with you, because you are one of the people we're supposed to have met with immediately after we were sworn in. But it was very difficult. We were dealing with a lot of issues that were pressing at that time with, for instance, the issue of Advocate Jiba and Advocate Mkhwebi. It had time frames which we could not avoid. So we had to deal with those issues as soon as we were elected to office. Thank you very much, Mahmoud Lepo. Any closing remarks?
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, it's quite heartening. It's actually a pleasure for us to have met you finally, and to have met the portfolio committee. At least we know what to do, especially because there's a lot of amendments that we need to be pushed through Parliament so that we are able to effectively regulate the profession. And lastly, we will definitely send it to the legal sector code, Honorable Jaji, and the nature of complaints and all the things that you have required within a week will be sent. Thank you. Thank you once again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members of the council.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you.
With the deal.
Thank you.